Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, that sounds like some kind of... Not sure if anyone's hearing any of the background. I apologize if you are. Seth and Sean, blacksportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio. Lots to talk about this week. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. We're doing our World Cup preview a little bit later in the show. Manny Ramirez is a hitting instructor. Rory and Caroline broke up. I'm heartbroken about it personally. Welcome back to New York, Mr. Palmer.
Well, thank you. It was a great weekend. Good time to have by all. Carly Fink, happy birthday to the better half of Seth Kamens. Yeah, I guess that's the better half. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you had to pick a half. But anyway, good time to have by all. I'm now back to the grind that is New York City, and I'm currently walking on Broadway. So just normal day as usual, I guess. It's about to rain here, though. That's the one bad thing. But too bad for Rory. Good for the rest of us.
Well,
sorry,
Rory...
And congratulations to Kanye.
Oh, yeah, because we were deeply concerned about that wedding. Actually, Rory won his first golf tournament in 18 weeks. Excuse me, in 18 months. Caroline Wozniacki, his fiancée, lost in the first round of the French Open. So... we can kind of see who recovered a little bit better than the other one did, at least right off the bat. But it's always a shame. But no, when you're an athlete and you're world famous and you're worth somewhere in the mid eight digits at age 25, it's just the idea of being married just doesn't seem to really correlate, even to someone as athletic and beautiful as the former number one player in the world, Miss Wozniacki. Well, I guess the sport, and I find this funny, the sport we really have not discussed so far this year, we haven't talked any baseball. And before we get to the NBA, we get to the respective playoffs, and before we get to the World Cup preview, we're only doing the preview because I will be out of the country next week. I will actually be in one of the World Cup countries in Costa Rica for a week, and I've decided it's probably a bit expensive to call in for the show. What are your thoughts on the – we're almost a quarter of the way – we're about a quarter of the way through the season – and what are your thoughts so far?
Well, as you said, baseball is a long grind. It's a marathon. It's definitely not a sprint. But there are definitely some teams that have tried to distance themselves from everybody else. And they're, I mean, the normal folk of the Tigers always going to jump out into a big lead, and they're 5 to 6 games above the Royals at this point. And then you have the surprises like the Milwaukee Brewers who are leaving the NL Central, and they're in the driver's seat right now. There's always those teams as well. So the question is, can the Brewers keep it going? And for those fans of the underdog, which I tend to be when it doesn't come to the Mets, this is the type of team that you tend to root for. You root for the teams that are making a show for the first time in years. So good for Mark Antonacci and for the rest of the Brewer team as of today. But watch out. The Cardinals are always tough, and the Pirates are just nipping at the heels.
The other team we want to talk about, a team that has barely even been a blip on the radar over the last 10 years, a team that has did a one-year purchase where they brought in Jose Reyes and Mark Burley and all these players and then promptly traded them all a year later. There wasn't too much really a thing about the Miami Marlins this year. You had Giancarlo Stanton and a bunch of rookies and no-names for all intents and purposes. Their best pitcher has been injured. How is this team over 500 at this point?
Well, they're over 500 today. I mean, that's when they had Jose Fernandez for the majority of the year, who is now going down for a Tommy John surgery that many of the best pitchers, unfortunately, are succumbing to recently. But at the same time, this is not a team that can keep this type of thing going. I mean, they have a good amount of young talent, but at the same time, the young talent, I just don't see it in the long haul, at least not for this year, especially with their pitching staff the way that it is. They're going to get some other young talent coming up, like Andrew Heaney, who was their number one pick a couple of years ago, and we'll see if that supplements what they have today. But I just don't see that working out. At least 500 is probably the best-case scenario for this team going forward, at least for this year.
The team with the best record in the major leagues is a team that I don't remember a team in recent memory having won two championships and really just written off less than 2 years later, the San Francisco Giants. 32-19, 4.5-game lead over the Dodgers, a 5-game lead over the Rockies. And we'll talk a little bit about Colorado and their all-world shortstop later on. How is Bruce Bochy doing it?
Well, Bruce Bochy has forever been able to do it with shadows and mirrors. I mean, Buster Posey is probably going to be a perennial player in the clubhouse for the MVP. He'll always be around. They have Hunter Pence, who is playing very well. Pablo Sandoval, unfortunately, has been a disappointment so far at third base, considering this is his walk year, free agent year. But it all comes down to pitching. And that team consistently puts out good pitching, and even more so, their bullpen is fantastic, and has always been. So while Bochy is doing it to smoke and mirrors, it's the same recipe. We do this with pitching, we get just enough hitting, and we play in a tremendous park for that type of baseball.
I guess we should congratulate Jeff Smarja on finally winning a game. A pitcher with an ERA under 2, opponent batting average under 150. The Cubs are not going anywhere.
No.
You know, in last place, worst record, almost the only team with a worse record is Houston. When do they trade Samardzija? You may not be able to get a higher value, you know, he is at this point.
Well, he's ready. I mean, they're ready to trade him. There's no doubt. It's just a matter of meeting the price that everybody wants. This is the best time to trade him. There's no question about that. I mean, at this point, he's got another year before he goes free agency. He's got both the end of this year and next year. So for a team that's acquiring him, the problem that's always been is that when you, in the latest collective bargaining agreement, that when you acquire a player that's in their free agency year, you cannot attach compensation if they leave as a free agent. When you get them a year and a half in, you can do that. So he will definitely be gone by the trading deadline this year, no doubt in my mind.
So Troy Tulowitzki's, again, we're a quarter of the way into the season, so you don't want to jump. Too much ahead of things. But Tulowitzki is considered, when healthy, the best shortstop in baseball over the last 5 to 7 years, or at least in the discussion, I should say. Unfortunately, he's just been unable to stay healthy. He's hitting over 500 at Coors. I realize this is Coors, but he's hitting 380 overall, 13 homers, 35 ribbies. Is there anyone even comparable so far this
no,
year?
No.
Or has he been overwhelmingly
I mean,
the best player in baseball?
When you look at shortstops, it's Tulowitzki and it's everybody else. There was a study, and I know that for those that are not the stat heads that I am, WAR is a stat that's known as wins above replacement. So basically it takes your average player, which would be a zero, and if you are better than replacement, if you're one win above replacement, you get a one and two, three, whatever. And over the course of a year, a good WAR is 3 wins above replacement. It's a good WAR. Tulowitzki is going to get about a 9 this year, and there won't be if he continues. I mean, obviously this means that he'll stay healthy, which he has yet to do for most of his career. But if he stays healthy, he'll have about a 9.0 WAR, and no other shortstop in baseball will probably have above a 5. That's how much he is that much better than everybody else. So the question is, does he stay healthy? I mean, By the way, the top WAR of all time is about an 11. So if he's at a 9 as a shortstop, that just tells you exactly where you're at. Mike Trout last year at a 10.1.
Difference being, of course, that Trout, although an amazing all-around player and a great outfielder, is playing outfield as opposed to a shortstop, possibly the most difficult defense.
Right, but wait a second. But WAR takes into account defense as well and takes into account the defensive position that you're playing as well. So while in the past you were always comparing RBIs and you never really had a defensive metric, this wins above replacement does take into account your wins above replacement at your position. So if he is 9 wins above every other shortstop or every other player, a replacement player, not necessarily a replacement shortstop, and you have Trout that's 10, they're pretty similar, and we all regard Mike Trout as the best player in the major leagues.
Would he be your first quarter AL MVP?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if we're looking at the quarter MVPs and LVPs, which are least valuable players, in the American League, it's probably going to be Mike Trout as the most valuable player, and Prince Fielder as the least valuable player. Not really his fault. He's been dealing with a herniated disc. But after the off-season trade to Texas, I picked him up in my fantasy league and every week. I mean, I thought he was going to be a monster in that ballpark. He just didn't come through, and now he's hurt and probably out the rest of the year. He had surgery, I believe, today to alleviate that herniated disc. Then you have in the National League, I mean, if you had asked me about 3 weeks ago, I would have said Jose Fernandez because, man, he was keeping the Marlins in it without a doubt. I mean, but Tulowitzki is far and above the most valuable player at this point. As far as the least valuable player, you still look to Atlanta. Dan Uggla has been awful.
You could almost retire the award under his name at this point, considering the last 3 years.
Yeah, you could call it the Dan Uggla Award. I mean, at this point, he's earning $12 million, and he's not batting .200. And normally, if you're talking about a guy like that that's earning that much money and not batting .200, you hope that he's a defensive wizard like Mark Belanger. Or even you could deal with that if it was an Antrell Simmons, who is the shortstop on that team. Unfortunately, Dan Uggla reminds me of Dick Stewart, who played first base in the 50s, don't throw it to Stonehands. I mean, he's horrendous. And just for some reference, Dick Stewart's nickname was Dr. Strange Club.
Matt Scherzer wins the Cy Young last year, turns down $144 million. People laughed. His ERA is dropped by a point. With two outs and runners on base, hitters are 0 for 28 against him. No, very few people have ever won Cy Young and won a repeat Cy Young. Who is his biggest competition? Is it his teammate, Mr. Verlander?
Well, it's going to be Verlander. It's going to be John Lester, who's had a very good year so far. Remember, this is only one quarter in, and when you're a pitcher, it's a little harder in the second half than it generally is in the first half because you get tired. And we'll see if he can keep it up. I mean, look, you got to give props to the man. He bet on himself, and he's come through in flying colors. I mean, I certainly did not. I thought he was crazy. You drop $144 million, and some guys laugh, and he says no. And you kind of say, huh? But at the same time, he's bet on himself. He's come through. I mean, John Lester's certainly smiling because whatever Scherzer does not get from the Tigers, you know they'll be bidding on a Lester or on a Samardzija or someone like that. The other pitchers are certainly smiling at what Scherzer is doing because he's just going to up the ante.
One last baseball note before we move on. The Yankees spent $500 million on free agents. Carlos Beltran, Brian McCann, Jacoby Ellsbury, and, of course, Tanaka. How impressed have you been with Tanaka so far through the first quarter of the season?
Well, I have to tell you, I've yet to see a Tanaka game. I mean, I'll be quite frank. Even when they played the Mets, I was not able to witness the game, and I'd like to get out to the stadium and see him pitch because all I hear is good things. But based on his stats and based on what I've talked to amongst the Yankees and the Yankee fans, remember, he's not the typical free agent and never was. Tanaka is 25 years old. I mean, when you talk about free agencies, you talk about free agency players. You talk about a McCann or an Ellsbury. They're 29 going on 30, and they've played 6 or 7 years, and that's how they got the free agency. Tanaka is 25 years old and is probably only entering the prime of his career rather than going past it. So this was a George Steinbrenner-ish type of move, but it's come up all roses so far for the Yankees.
Before
now,
we get Beltran, on to...
on the other hand, Beltran, 3 years and 39, they may be regretting that already.
Yeah. Before we go on to the NBA and the NHL, one quick football note. I don't know if you know about this. Dallas's best defensive player, Sean Lee, injury-prone,
yeah,
but really the center of the Cowboys' defense, torn ACL, out for the year, well, it's looking like. Now, Dallas fans are prone to hyperbole, and Dallas media often is, yeah, kind of embellishes a few things. How devastating is this to you? To me, this is a devastating shot to Dallas getting off the 8-8 Schneid and making the NFC playoffs this year.
Well, as you know, Sean Lee is one of my favorite players. Always has been. I do like – my favorite players are middle linebackers generally because they control the defense. And you saw last year when Sean Lee went out, you and I had him on our fantasy team, so we noticed when he went out. And he averages 9-10 tackles a game, controls that defense, and when he went out, Dallas' defense suffered a great deal. He's the equivalent of Luke Kuechly in Carolina, or James Farrier when he was in, or LeVon Kirkland. I mean, Mike Singletary. I wouldn't say to the degree that he's a Singletary, but he ran that defense in the same manner. This is a huge loss. This is probably the one guy that Dallas couldn't afford to lose on their defense. I don't think anybody else is even close. And now they're going to have to rely on another middle linebacker. They're going to have to hope that Bruce Carter. You've heard of Bruce Carter, right?
The immortal Bruce Carter. I remember him well.
Yeah. One-time Maryland Terrapin. He was shifted inside. And we're going to see if he takes over that middle linebacker spot. But, man, this is as devastating as you can ask for, especially with a team that also needs Anthony Spencer to come on. Unlike he did last year, and according to Jason Garrett, he will probably start on the PUP list. So, I mean, it's already a bad offseason for them, for Dallas. I have yet to listen to Jerry Jones and see what he says, but this is already a bad one.
Well, going on to the playoffs, we have four left in the NBA, four left in the NHL, and none of them are 2-2. The only series you really see going deep is Oklahoma San Antonio, and that's kind of contingent on tonight's game four. The hope before this year was that the Pacers, who gave Miami everything they could handle last year, would be able to knock off the two-time defending champions. Off to an amazing start in the beginning of the year. Struggled throughout the second half of the season. But the hope was, even with disappointing wins, they didn't look overwhelming against Atlanta. They didn't look overwhelming against Washington. But the idea was that... Excuse me, sorry about that. The idea was that they would be able to turn it around against the Heat. They played a great first game and have done nothing since. Is this series over?
Yeah, this series is definitely over. There's no, we've talked about this. The hardest thing that you can have is disharmony or not congruent, cohesion. And when Roy Hibbert scores 0 points in a game and the whole team just stinks and they're blaming it on the refs, they're blaming it on the Heat, they're blaming it on everybody, this is over. And it's unfortunate because I viewed this team as the team that could go to the finals, and you picked them to win. So, it's your deal. But then again, I picked the Warriors to go to the finals, so look at me. So, anyway, the question is, at this point, does Frank Vogel lose his job? And I think that if they lose the series, I think he does.
I think if he does, every team with a vacancy will be at the top of their list. The question, I think the bigger question is Roy Hibbert gone? Do you break up this team because it probably will not be able to jump Miami, or do you wait and see what happens if the big three all resign, or do they separate? Nobody really knows at this point, although I think everyone tends to think they'll make another run, especially if they do the three.
Well, this is all based on whether that contract is also amenable to be traded. I mean, remember, Roy Hibbert signed a max contract for 4 years. Paul George signed an extension that's a max extension. They have a lot of big salaries on that team. We've talked about this. Even Luis Scola is a big salary, $6, $7 million. George Hill is $8 million. David West is $9 million. There are some big salaries on this team. So, and I'd go even one further. What team, and Seth, I pose this to you, let's look at the teams that play the style that Indiana does in the half-court offense. There aren't many fits for Roy Hibbert. I mean, he's a good player, but is he really a max player? And if he's not a max player, then do you give up that amount of money? I mean, the Knicks saw it when they right now with Tyson Chandler. Tyson Chandler is earning $12 million a year. In the Knicks offense, especially if they go to the triangle, he's not worth $12 million a year. So is Roy Hibbert in any other offense but Indiana worth $14 to $16 million a year? And I'm not sure he is, except for one. Can the San Antonio Spurs, if Tim Duncan retires, take a shot at Roy Hibbert? Because that's an offense that he works in.
The problem would be is trying to see what kind – I never really thought about it. That there wouldn't be much of a trade. They wouldn't be looking to trade him. The problem is I don't know what San Antonio can offer. You're not going to offer Thiago. You're not going to offer Kawhi Leonard or Parker or Ginobili. Thiago Split is not going to be enough. So I don't even know who they would offer. A couple picks. You know, Hibbert is still a top five center. And I would find it kind of amazing. I don't think Indiana's going to throw him away. They're going to ask for ransom, although that may be difficult considering he's been scoreless in 5 of the 20 playoff games so far this year.
Well, and I think that's the point, is what can they get for him and whether they are willing to throw him away. Because, remember, this is $14 to $16 million on the cap for a guy that's scoring 0 points in the playoffs. He's a guy that, at this point, if I'm the Pacers, cannot be counted on for his 18-5, 18-10. He can't. So can you win with this guy as the lunch pail center on this team? He's obviously not the go-to guy. So last year when he was in the playoffs, he was the go-to guy against the Heat. So the question is he better off as the go-to guy than he is as a secondary or complementary player? And if he is, then San Antonio fits. I mean, I like that fit. There are very few fits in the NBA that fit Roy Hibbert, and that's one of them. The Wizards are another one, but they have way too many players of that ilk with Nene and Martin Gortat.
Well, Gortat's a free agent after this year.
I fully expect them to re-sign him.
Okay.
He fits the Yankees. He fits the Knicks. He actually does. He would fit a triangle offense. The problem is the Knicks don't have anything to trade for him unless you're trading Tyson Chandler. Tyson Chandler actually fits Indiana. But that's an interesting swap, which I'm not sure the Knicks would take on 2 more years of a $14 million contract. There's that.
And I'm not sure Indiana would take on Tyson after the year he has had.
Well, let me ask you this. If you're the Nets and you have Brook Lopez, And you can trade Brook Lopez or Roy Hibbert straight up. Salaries work. You can do it based on the injury history of Lopez. He's got 3 more years at $14-15 million. Hibbert's got 2 more years at $14-15 million. Right now, to me, Hibbert's a better quality. Is a better quantity than Lopez, knowing that he's healthy. So do you make that trade for 2 years? Because you know your future is now, New Jersey.
Interesting question. I think Lopez's ceiling as an offensive player is higher than Hibbert's. I think Hibbert's as a defensive player is better. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. My gut would be yes, but I also don't know if Hibbert, you know, Hibbert does seem a bit fragile mentally, and I'm not sure playing in the Brooklyn, playing in a New York market would particularly be conducive to that. New York kind of preys on the weak, and I'm not saying he's weak, but I'm saying there's certainly things, there certainly have been issues that have kind of come about.
I completely agree with you. I'm looking for fits. I mean, the only other fit that I can think of, and granted, this is off the top of my head, I'm thinking of two other fits. Sacramento, where he plays with Boogie Cousins.
But then Sacramento has nothing to offer.
But you'd have to trade Cousins to get Hibbert, so that wouldn't work. Or does he go to Minnesota in a trade for Kevin Love? And that would actually get Minnesota the best value. If Clay Thompson's not on the board, if they can get a Hibbert in a number one, or a Hibbert in a number one and maybe a lesser player.
Yeah, but wait a second. That doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. Indiana has David West, who pretty much plays the same position, is a definitive four that K. Love is. Now, Love is more of a stretch four, obviously, but neither of them are big enough to play center. Minnesota.
Love is big enough to play center in the East.
Love is 6'10", height-wise, but nobody thinks of him he's not a center by nature. He'd be an out-of-position center. Yes, has been had some success with an Al Horford in Atlanta. He's done the same thing. But I'm not sure. But again, Horford is also not a three-point shooter. Horford is a back-to-the-basket shoot offensive player. Also, Love is a pretty weak defensive player. And the strength that Indiana, a lot of Indiana's strength is their defense because of Hibbert. I'm not sure that would fit. Plus, also, didn't Minnesota give the center Petkovic $56 million?
They did.
So I'm not sure you're going to really go with the double center.
The two teams that come to mind, given what you just said, are the team that tried to sign him, which would be Portland, where he would sit right next to LaMarcus Aldridge. Which would be very interesting, but I don't know what Portland has to give. That would be one issue, because they're not giving up Lillard. So
no, but I think you could do something along the lines of a Batum and a depends if Indiana re-signs Lance Stephenson. There's a bunch, and we're kind of going a little bit off topic here, but there's a lot of variations that can go with this, and we can discuss this more after the season. We should talk quickly about how Cleveland, for the third time in 4 years, has the number one pick in the draft. And unlike last year, where there were five or six players that nobody was that excited for, there are three players that everyone is excited for. Off the top of your head, does Cleveland go Embiid? Do they go Wiggins or do they go Parker?
I think they go either. I think Wiggins is out of this conversation. And the reason is Dan Gilbert is very impatient. Remember, he's the owner that said, to LeBron when he left, we will win a championship before you do. Well, that obviously did not happen. But Wiggins is too raw, and I think while he has the most upside, he also has the most downside, like tremendous downside from what I've been reading. And what I've watched is that he can't go to the right. He doesn't like to dribble. His passing is inadequate. Now, I'm not saying I saw all this, but scouts have seen this. So, to me, if you're going to take a shot, you take it with Embiid, who most scouts and most personnel are saying has the upside of Hakeem Olajuwon, but right now isn't there. And if you want the short thing, you're taking Jabari Parker. But I don't think you take that chance if you're Cleveland on Wiggins. I just don't see it, even as a three. Embiid fits their lineup because Spencer Hawes is a free agent. Parker fits their lineup because Luol Deng is a free agent. Either way, I mean, and if Parker's playing the two, they'll get rid of Deion Waiters, my boy. But they will get rid of him. So, I mean, the fact is, I don't think you're going Wiggins. It's going to be one of those two. I think Wiggins falls to number three, and I think he is going to Philadelphia.
Okay. The other side of the NBA Final Four is Game 4 tonight, San Antonio and Oklahoma. Now, San Antonio didn't buy that Serge Ibaka was out for the year. Nobody really bought that Serge Ibaka was out for the year. And after two relatively lopsided losses at the Alamo Dome, magically Serge Ibaka showed up for Game 3, and Oklahoma City relatively easily cruised to a 15-point win. Does Game 4 decide the series?
Yeah, it does. And the reasoning is Ibaka's coming off a game they played 2 days ago. When you have a calf injury or a leg injury, a lot is – remember, he hadn't played in almost a week. So he had a lot of time to rest. Now he had 15 points and 7 rebounds and 4 blocks. He played pretty much most of the game. Pretty much most of. Yeah, I got to stop doing that. He played most of the game, and here he is now 2 days later on the turnaround. So can he come back? They are a totally, totally different team with him in than with him out. Because I was watching the game the other night while I was watching the Rangers-Canadians game. He's a pick-and-pop guy. Seth and I talked about this offline. He reminds me very much of Charles Oakley. Or an Anthony Mason in a offensive setting in which you learn about the pick and roll, you learn the John Stockton, Karl Malone pick and roll. Ibaka doesn't do that. He just rolls out and stands there and says, come and get me. And the most improved part of Serge Ibaka's game is the fact that he can hit 15-foot jump shots consistently.
I can't really argue too much about that. I mean, to me, as I said, the series is contingent on tonight. I can't see San Antonio. I can't see Oklahoma City winning 3 in a row. I shouldn't say it's contingent on tonight. Please find this. I don't know if Oklahoma City can go into San Antonio and win in a game 7. Don't know if they can do it. I know a couple years ago they won 4 in a row. This is a better San Antonio team. Kawhi Leonard is a better player at this point. My gut is Oklahoma wins the series. I do, but I think wins the game. I think San Antonio still wins the series. I mean, it's a toss-up.
Well, PJ Carlesimo was on ESPN the other day, and he's like, one team has to win a road game to win this series. So, if remember, San Antonio has lost, I think, 14 out of the last 16 games in Oklahoma City. So I don't see them winning tonight if Ibaka is reasonably healthy. So can they go in and win Game 5 in San Antonio? I think they can. If Ibaka is, again, this all is about Ibaka's health. That team is totally different with Ibaka. And let me ask you this. And so two guys that did not, who went from starters to DNPs last game. I can't even pronounce the guy's name.
Cephalosha. I thought you were going to say Fab Mello.
No. Fab Cephalosha and Nick Collison both started Game 3 and sat out. Game 2. And sat out the entirety of Game 3. Now, that's a huge change in your philosophy when you're a coach. The question is, can those guys come back and play if Brooks needs them? Those are two guys that I think are professional enough and have been around the block, especially Collison, that they know how to play this game. But when you are changing your lineup so significantly midway through the series, you take the risk of losing your team, or at least losing those players.
I agree that they're professional, and it probably won't bother them as much as it would bother, say, if that happened to a Reggie Jackson,
right,
a third-year point guard. The question I have about that, Collison I understand to a degree, because Collison was an eighth or ninth man who stepped up because of Ibaka's issues. Cephalosha is a shooting guard. There really was no reason, unless there's an injury issue,
Well, what Brooks was doing was playing more of Reggie Jackson and Westbrook together, side by side.
I understand that. But still, I find it a bit surprising. And I think he would be the more fragile mentally of the two. Collison has been around forever, is known his role. Cephalosha has been a starter for the better part of the last five years on Oklahoma City. Even with James Harden, he would alternate kind of that 2-3 swing. So I'm curious to see how he's going to respond. I'm curious to see how the team will I'm curious.
It's just something to watch tonight to see how the team does react. And better yet, who's starting? Will Cephalosha start tonight? I mean, I think you're seeing Ibaka definitely start because you need to start him coming in with a calf injury. But we'll see. I mean, like I said, that'll be an interesting game. Moving on to the hockey real quick because we got 25 minutes to go and we got to get in this World Cup preview thing. You see that the Rangers played really well. The Canadian goalie is standing on his head. I mean, he was unbelievable in game four. You see, and we both watched the game. Do you see that the Canadians have any shot of coming back in this series? I can't see
it. Not without Carey Price. That was the game they needed to win. And I do think they win tonight in Montreal. I think the Rangers will win in six. Montreal looks tired as a whole. They're not as deep, I don't believe, as the Rangers. They played a brutal seven-game series. Although, I mean, the Rangers in against the Bruins in the series before, to be fair, the Rangers played a pretty tough one against Pittsburgh. I just think Lundqvist is the best goalie left in the playoffs. I know all apologies to Jonathan Quick. I think the Rangers are just playing better right now. Martin St. Louis looks rejuvenated. The team is there deep. And they are a very hungry looking team. I just think they're more talented than Montreal. I think they wrap it up. Not tonight, but I think they wrap it up on Thursday.
Okay, and we have one other 3-1 series over in Chicago and LA. LA's up 3-1. I think Chicago, great team. This just isn't their year. I believe this is NBC's dream. It's LA and New York.
It really is. If LA had a huge. I think Chicago, New York would actually have been their dream, because Chicago is just a more devout hockey town than LA. But they're not going to complain about this. The Kings just look really, really good right now. They've been down in the two games that they won. They were down, but won convincingly in both. One, they scored five in a row. I think in about a 12-minute span. They just seem to be on a roll, and Chicago, who, if they won this series, would be kind of on the precipice of a dynasty, having won two of the last 3 years. And I forget if they made the championship the Kings did, excuse me. And that would be 3 out of 4 years in Stanley Cup, with at least a minimum of 2 championships. But it does feel like it's the Kings' year. And LA, New York would be NBC's a great series for NBC and great series to watch.
It's a little bit of a shame, me being in Chicago next week. I would have liked to have seen the Hawks come back, because you love to go visit another city where their team is just so good, and that the fan base is so passionate. As I was talking with many people in Chicago today, where they said to me, Wrigley? Why would we go to Wrigley on a Wednesday night? But if the Hawks are playing, we definitely go to the United Center, or we go to a bar. So we go to a bar over going to an actual game. It tells you a little bit where the mindset of the Chicagoans, people from Chicago are. So Landon Donovan, a great segue, right? Chicago to the LA Galaxy. We should have gone from the Kings. That would have made sense. Landon Donovan, not part of the World Cup team. We have tried to get him on as a guest host here at Backsports Stage. It has not worked yet. I think, quite frankly, Fox and ESPN have the upper hand on us, given that
we're a solid third.
Yeah, all we can give him is just some airtime. They can give him a little bit more money. But anyway, so he doesn't make the team. I know you are against this. I'm not so sold on being against it. In fact, I think that if they had decided that he was not going to start, that this is a good move. If they had decided that he is not one of the best 11, right? Yeah, with the goalie, it's 11. It's kind of like having TJ Oshie on the U.S. hockey team. At that point, if you're not one of the starters, you pick a specialist. You pick a guy that does one thing amazingly good, and you go with that, whether that be a penalty shooter or whatnot. And I don't think I think Donovan's on the back end of his career. I mean, I don't think he's one of the top 11. I think they decided he wasn't going to be a starter, and they said, let's give some youth a chance here.
The question is this, and I understand the argument. I don't know if TJ Oshie's the right comparison, but I understand the point is if he's not a starter, is it worth bringing him in or having a guy who's 21? You know, but the problem is the guys who are 20, 21, Julian Green, one of them. There's a guy, John Michael Brooks, another. These are guys, you know, one of them is playing in the fourth division of the German league. And and now the question is, he had to choose between the U.S. and Germany, and he came to U.S. Is this a thank you for making the U.S. for joining the U.S.? Now this is or is this just preparation for 2018? Because there's no way he's going to get the flight. I disagree. I think Donovan is a guy you could bring in as a spark plug in the 60th, 65th minute. I'm not sure if he's in shape to start. I'm assuming based on why Klinsmann cut him, and Klinsmann has never been a huge fan of Donovan. And I'm assuming that he was just not in shape. But to me, this is a professional, a true professional in every sense of the word, an individual who's been the captain of this team before. It's not like we have, we being the U.S., have 20 All-American starters at the end of the front seven. We don't. So, to me, if you can bring someone who's a true spark off the bench, a guy who has experience, a guy who's been a captain, a guy who is a true leader, I'm not sure that this was the right call.
So who was the last guy on the team? I mean, at this point, who was the guy that Donovan was left off for, or is that not even known? I mean, is that just a concept that you can make a guess? Like on the U.S. Olympic team, and I go back to the hockey because that was the last time that a team was selected for anything else, we could have some insight into the drafting process with Scott Burnside's commentary.
Right.
So we don't necessarily know, but if you had to pick one guy, was it that guy?
Yeah, I am bringing up the team, just so I don't want to have 20. And they're actually, the U.S. is playing tonight. I'm trying to come up with the.
They have a couple of friendlies before the World Cup starts.
Right. There were one or two guys that I was two players that were players that we don't think are going to play at any point.
They're the third goalie.
Well, no, but you always bring a third goalie, yes, but kind of the similarity, the eighth, the seventh defenseman,
mm-hmm.
the eighth midfielder.
Yep.
You have it's a 23-man team, and yes, you have three goalies. You have 20 backup. You have nine backups for 11.
Do you suit up everybody in soccer? I'm not sure.
Yes.
Like in hockey, I know you have two pairings that don't suit up.
Yes,
so
you start up everyone suits up, and I am trying to find the U.S. I guess I should be able to find this.
See, this is the unusual concept of the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, in the fact that I'm asking the questions and Seth's answering rather than the other way around. But while Seth's looking that up, so let's go through the pairings here, since I have that straight up. So Group A is Brazil, Croatia, Mexico, and Cameroon. So I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Cameroon's going to finish fourth of those teams. The other three, you kind of go back and forth, except they got Brazil so far ahead of the other two. So my pairings are Brazil, Croatia, Mexico, Cameroon, in that order.
And that's how I have it as well. Mexico, if people remember, Mexico, since winning the Olympic gold medal in 2012, they struggled mightily, led by Giovanni Dos Santos and Chico Hernandez from Man U. Remember, they got very, very – they needed the help from the U.S. to even qualify for the World Cup this year. They have not – they played a little bit better since the qualifications. Croatia is a tough team. And all these Slavic teams that have kind of come about over the last 10 years are just mentally very tough. I have Brazil 1, Croatia 2, Mexico 3, Cameroon 4.
Okay. So now we're going on to the Group B. It's Spain, Chile, the Netherlands, and Australia. I got Australia not doing anything again. Spain far and ahead, number one. And then Chile and the Netherlands going 2 and 3.
Chile and Netherlands is actually one of the best. This is one of the toughest 2-3s that you can see. I have the Netherlands simply because one of Chile's best players, and I forget the name, tore his ACL, and most likely will be out for the Cup. I don't really trust this Holland team. They're an interesting mix. You have guys like Arjen Robben and Robin from Bayern Munich, Robin Van Persie from Man U. But they don't strike me as strong as they were, say, 4 years ago when they made the finals and lost in an ugly, ugly, ugly game to Spain in overtime.
So in one of the easier groups, Colombia I have in Group C, far and away number one. And this is going to happen. I mean, you're looking at Central America, South America, as probably the top echelon teams along with some European teams. And you have these smaller countries probably going to be lesser of the grouping. So that's Colombia, Japan, Greece, Ivory Coast, in that order.
Okay, we change a little bit here for me. I have no faith in Colombia. Colombia always seems to underachieve. They're the San Jose Sharks. They're the whoever team you want to use. I guess right now the LA Dodgers, for lack of a better term. They seem to just underachieve. I do have them make – Japan is not as strong as they've been in the past. Greece just doesn't have the talent. I have Ivory Coast led by Didier Drogba, number one, and Colombia number two.
All right. So a shocker there. Well, not really a shocker, just a different opinion. In one of the stronger groups, I have Italy number one, England number two, Uruguay number three, and Costa Rica number four.
Here's the problem. This is all contingent. Luis Suarez, who was the British player, British Premier League player of the year, got hurt and just underwent surgery. They don't for Uruguay. They don't know if he comes back. If he comes back, Uruguay would be my one. Italy would be my two. If he doesn't come back, Italy is my one, and England is my two. My gut is he does not come back, so I'm going to go Italy one, England two.
Okay, so moving to the other side of the bracket, Group E, France in order, France, Ecuador, Switzerland, and Honduras. And I don't think there's any I think France is the leader in this town.
They are. But France also, if you remember 4 years ago, they almost revolted and didn't play in the World Cup. France, since they won the World Cup 12 years ago, has been I guess they made the finals in 06, but since then, even in the Europeans, they've been awful. They were an embarrassment 4 years ago where the coach, the GM, everyone pretty much resigned right after. I do think they're a little bit more disciplined this year, led by Frank Ribéry and Karim Benzema. I have France 1. Switzerland is one of those teams you could lose to anyone, could beat to anyone, but they just don't have the scoring. I'm going to take the South American team, Ecuador, to squeeze over Switzerland in the 2-seed.
Okay, as do I. So we have that the same. In the F, Group F, Argentina, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Nigeria, and then Iran.
Well, I don't think anyone really has much doubt about Argentina's number one. They are stacked offensively. It's a question of whether their back four can hold up. When Carlos Tevez, who is pretty much the Italian League Player of the Year, right there, doesn't even make the team, that says quite a bit. Iran just isn't ready. Nigeria has seen better days. I'm going to go with Bosnia as my number two.
Group G, I have Germany, Portugal, Ghana, U.S.
I'm a homer. I'm not going to lie. I have Germany 1, Portugal.
No way do you have U.S. going to the medal rounds.
I do, not to the medal rounds, but I do believe the U.S. beats Ghana. Portugal, similarly to Colombia, always underachieves. They have Cristiano Ronaldo, but they're not a great team. It's not an easy draw. I do believe the U.S. has the best defense in this bracket, or I should say the best goalie, excuse me, in Howard. Although Germany is, and I forget, Bayer is also very good. I have Germany 1, U.S. 2, Portugal 3, and Ghana, who just got old, 4.
Hey. Well, there's the second change we have. So far, the only two differences that we have are actually in these Group C, Group G. Group C, I have Colombia, Japan, Greece, and Ivory Coast. And you, I believe, had Japan. You're Japan first?
No, I had Ivory Coast first.
You had Ivory Coast first. Okay, Group H, the final grouping. Belgium, Korea, Russia, Algeria.
Belgium is 4 years away from being a championship caliber team. They are very, very good. The problem they have is most likely they're going to be playing Argentina in the quarterfinals. I have Belgium 1. I have Russia, which nobody really knows too much about them because most of their players play in the Russian league and it's just not as well known. South Korea has fallen far from 12 years ago. Algeria is kind of an also-ran. So Belgium, Russia, Algeria, South Korea.
Okay, so explain to us how this works from here. You got the stages.
Okay.
You got the divisions, the eight or ten, I think it's eight. Eight different groupings.
Right.
So two from each go up.
Correct? Two from each go up, and what you have is from A and B, you have A1, the team who wins A plays number two and B. The team that wins B plays number two and A. So that's how it works.
So we've both agreed on these. So you have Brazil versus Chile and Spain versus Croatia.
No, I have Brazil versus the Netherlands.
Sorry, Spain versus the Netherlands, and you have Spain versus the Netherlands.
No, I have Brazil versus the Netherlands.
Oh,
and
Brazil
I have Spain
versus
Croatia.
The Netherlands, and I have Brazil versus Chile. I have Brazil winning anyway.
Yes, I have Brazil and Spain both moving forward.
Okay, as do I. Okay, Group C and Group D, you have Ivory Coast, and I have Colombia facing off against England.
Yes.
I think England wins that game.
As do I.
Against either Colombia or Ivory Coast. And then it's Japan versus Italy, and I don't see any doubt that Italy's going to win that game.
Well, I didn't have Italy. I didn't have Japan. I had Colombia.
Right.
And I had Italy. Yeah, I have England and Italy advancing.
So both in Group D advance.
Yes.
So nobody from Group C. Then we have Belgium versus Portugal, which I think is one of I'm sorry, you have Belgium versus the U.S. I think Belgium wins.
As do I.
Do you as well?
Yeah.
And then I got Germany versus I have Korea. I believe you have Russia?
I have Russia.
And I think Germany wins. In fact, I have Germany going very far in this tournament.
Okay.
And then we have France versus Bosnia.
Yes.
And I have France winning.
This
and then
I have France, but again, this is kind of my iffy. I think Bosnia has a very good chance. I don't have much faith in France, but yeah, I'm going to go France.
And then you have Switzerland, I believe, and I have Ecuador.
No, I have Ecuador.
Okay, then we both have Ecuador versus Argentina, and I have Argentina winning.
Agreed.
Okay, so now how does that go? So now we got two from the top pairings and then two from the next. So now what happens here?
With semis are Brazil, Germany, and Spain, we have the quarter. So we have
quarters.
Brazil versus England.
And I have England winning that.
I have Brazil winning that. We have France versus Germany.
I have Germany winning that.
As do I. Spain versus Italy.
I have Italy winning that.
I have Spain. And Argentina versus Belgium.
And I have Argentina winning that.
Okay. So I have Argentina as well. So our final four, yours is England versus Germany.
I have Germany winning that.
I have Germany beating Brazil. And Argentina versus Italy for you.
I have Italy winning that.
And I have Argentina beating Spain. And my final is Argentina-Germany, and I have Argentina. Yours is Germany-Italy.
And I have Germany.
There you go.
That was easy. And you know what? You can take anything I said with a grain of salt because I know nothing about any of these teams. I'll tell you that flat out. I did a little bit of research on this. Wow, we came up with 5 minutes ago. That was perfect timing. Really, go with Seth on this. If you're betting the games, go with Seth. We were almost close, very close together in the first rounds. Please don't bet on anything I just mentioned. And we don't endorse gambling, but if you'd like to wager, go right ahead.
Well,
anyway,
especially if you live in Costa Rica where there's no issues, where
yeah,
I will
absolutely.
Be next week.
And I'll be at Wrigley. So next week we probably will not be having a show because I don't do it from a different time zone. It just doesn't work. But we're working on getting a show on the road in the end of July. So we're taking the show on the road. We'll probably be in either Seattle or in San Francisco for that show. At the end of July. So 5 minutes left. I am going to go first because I'm going to steal the Manny Ramirez here.
All yours.
Hey! The better half is here! A guest appearance by Seth's better half. So anyway, how did you not hear us for the last hour? Anyway, we're pretty loud. So anyway, so for the last 5 minutes, Manny Ramirez has been hired as a hitting coach. Not only a hitting coach, but a player coach by the Chicago Cubs. I don't really know what to think about this because Manny being Manny is not what you want to teach kids how to do that. You do want to teach them how to hit, though. And if you're going to hire Barry Bonds as a hitting coach, you might as well hire Manny Ramirez as a hitting coach because they're both cheaters. Well, I guess if you can get away with it, why not teach how to cheat? I mean,
Mark McGwire has been relatively successful.
Yeah. Look, these guys know how to hit. As I've said many times before, PEDs don't teach you how to put the bat to the ball. They may add a little bit of distance, but they certainly don't teach you the hand-eye coordination. So as long as Theo Epstein is on point in saying that he will not be called up at any point and he will not hinder the progress of any of the great prospects like Javier Baez and Chris Bryant and Jorge Soler in the farm system, this can only be beneficial. And I think there's another reason to this. Javier Baez has struggled, like tremendously struggled in the minor leagues. And he's been favorably compared to Manny Ramirez. He's also Latino. I think there has to be something here because the two of the three most important prospects for the Cubs are Latino players in Jorge Soler and Javier Baez. So I wouldn't be surprised if something along the lines. That's all I got to say. So, Seth, you got to go.
In one of the stupider things I've ever heard, Yaya Toure, who is the captain or one of the mainstays of the British Premier League, winning Manchester City, and also actually will be in the World Cup, I believe, with the Ivory Coast, is now asking for a transfer, not because he doesn't want to be in Manchester, but apparently because he is distraught because Manchester City didn't give him a cake to celebrate his 31st birthday.
And I have decided to quit the show because Seth did not give me a cake for my 38th birthday. Just wanted to say that.
I am a horrible human being, but I did give you a really cool T-shirt.
You did?
Yes, this is not a joke. That he believes that his agent believes that he has been disrespected. Now, this is a man who's making €200,000 a week.
Which is about $350,000 a week. Times that by 52 weeks, he's making over $150 million, right? No, $15 million.
This is why Mr. Palmer is an attorney.
I don't do the conversion of euro very well.
But we see how he handles. He gets a little bit flustered even when handling tips on trying to figure out a restaurant bill.
But I did figure it out, as
we noticed last night. And all props to the restaurant, the Mooring out in Newport.
Absolutely.
What a phenomenal place. Yes, 15. He's disrespected at $16 million because he didn't get a cake. You know what? Did we get a cake?
We did, I think.
I don't think we got a cake.
You know what the bigger question is? Why didn't the agent get him a cake? You're earning 3% of $15 million? I know what that is. That's $450,000. For $450,000, you can afford a $20 cookie cake.
Actually, I think you're right, $450,000. He could get a very good cake.
He
could get a cookie cake.
Made of diamonds.
That is true. He could get a cake with a girl jumping out. There's a lot of different cakes.
Steven Seagal and Erica Eliak
in Under Siege.
Under Siege. Well played.
But I don't think this is a real reason to ask for a transfer from your team. Grow up. So we're off until 2 weeks, and then the World Cup goes on. The NBA Finals, the NHL Finals will be in full strength. And baseball, nobody will care about it. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kalins. Good night, everybody.
See ya.